Fierce Femme Media.
Hannah.
So no funny quips or jokes leading into this one.
We got nothing.
You got nothing. Good evening, everyone. Or hello, worst fucking day of 2020, everyone.
Mm-hmm. It's right there at the top. I mean, not probably the top for me, but it's right. It's a close second.
I'm Jackie.
I'm Stacy.
And I'm Erin.
This is the weekly wind down. And as I'm sure you already know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away today.
But we all just found out, like,
yeah,
40 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cry again already.
So, to add more fun, the three of us are about ready to start our period. So, this should be just glorious.
First idea to record ever.
Sad.
Okay. Tonight, I'm drinking whatever I just grabbed out of my fridge without looking. Maine and Gary. I think I've had it before. It's fine.
Okay. I'm drinking this Golden State Cider, which I really love. I didn't realize until today that their logo is a little otter, and he's like rubbing his little paws together, and that's real cute. This one I got is the Brut one. So most of their ciders are made with champagne yeast. So this is like super dry. It's not very sweet, and it kind of tastes like champagne. It's as good as anything could be today.
I'm drinking White Claw.
Wow, the one day you deviate from vodka, huh? It's probably the day you need it.
Well, I started a diet this week, and...
Listen, diets are canceled till 2021. Stronger. Like, just stop.
Well, I just wanted... I'm going to talk about it for my Obsessed With, because I feel like it's a good thing to talk about, because I started Noom.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, it's not like a diet. Like, I'm still allowed to pretty much do what I want. I can fucking do what I want.
Oh.
But
since we're already being depressing, we should just talk about our diets too.
Right? Periods, yeah. Diets, and death. That sounds like a great podcast. Goddamn. So, yeah.
That's how we get lemon. The Dakotas.
Yeah. Let's get some fucking, let's get some new listeners.
I think that's the only way to describe what's happening is just that guttural noise I just made. Like, if anybody was to ask me how I'm doing, I think my only appropriate response would be, like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that meme of, what is it, Matthew McConaughey? Like, how's your 2020 going so far? And it's like,
I thought it was the one that says it when it hasn't been your day, your month, or even your year. Or your day, your week, your month, or even your year.
I mean,
it's got him all like strung out.
Yeah, that too.
All right, so we're gonna do some interesting facts about RBG. But before, hang on a second. She just lurks in the bathroom so background sometimes, and it stresses me out. Okay, so Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Just that makes me want to cry. Like, you just saying her name. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, why don't we, before we go over some facts, why don't we talk about how you came to love Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Okay. I'll start. So I've always been, like, as long as I can remember, I've been super, super into politics. And I remember when I was in... I want to say I was in high school, but I'd have to see when the book actually came out. I got the book America the Book that Jon Stewart wrote, and it's kind of like a textbook, and it had the like Supreme Court justice paper dolls. And then it had some information about the justices and stuff in there. And I just remember like reading everything about her and thinking like, that's a badass lady. And like in this book, she just looked like this kind of cute older lady, and, you know, with her frilly little situation with her robes. And it's such a weird thing because they're paper dolls, so they're all like in their underwear, and then you like put their robes on them. But I just remember thinking like, dang, this tiny little lady has done so much, like more than most people will do in like, could do in several lifetimes. Like, and then just the more you like read about her, you get to know her. I don't know that she's had a stance on much that I haven't agreed with. She's just been a champion of women's rights, civil rights, like just. It's hard with that older age group and with Supreme Court justices. And one of the arguments against lifetime appointments is that a lot of times they get, their opinions aren't as relevant because the times change so much. But she's one I feel like her opinions and her views on things have changed with the times and changed with society. And I think for somebody older, that's like, crazy, you know what I mean? That's like really impressive. That shows a really open mind and like willingness to learn and truly do what's right. And I don't know that there's really many other people who have sacrificed as much. And I know that, you know, people can say, oh, people have sacrificed their lives, but like even people that died at like a younger age, like let's just say like in that were in the army or whatever, like this woman literally held on and was dying of pancreatic cancer and was trying to hold on as long as she could. So the next appointment to replace her, you know, would be under a Democratic president. And I just, like, she sees the danger of, or she saw the danger of Trump appointing somebody like another Brett Kavanaugh. And
yeah, like make no mistake, Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't get to retire. She died in service to her country. That's undeniable.
Yeah.
I first learned about her, God, I was a teenager, and just, I was kind of like the time where my interest in the whole feminist movement started and kind of like how it got here and how we ended up where we were in the 90s, which seems like so long ago, probably because it was, but I kept seeing that there wasn't a single major decision that took place in the last like 60 years that she wasn't at the forefront of, that she wasn't yelling about, that she wasn't screaming from the rooftops about, and that she wasn't trying to help legally and in protest. And then, you know, when you keep seeing her name pop up, you start reading about her, and that's when you find out how hard it was for her not just to be in law school, but to even get a job after law school. She was number one in her class and still struggled to find a job when she graduated from law school. And she's always kind of straddled, she straddles this weird line for me where it's not often in our own generations, or at least I don't know that I've ever encountered one that you get to actually witness a living legend exist. And I she was one. And even her friendship with Scalia, who's like her polar opposite in every every imaginable way, her friendship with him, and I guess that kind of reminder of we can have different opinions and still see the humanity and decency in people was, I think, what she represented, even though she was, you know, she's still on the front lines with Gloria Steinem and was screaming about, you know, abortion rights and fighting for abortion rights, but at the same time was still very, very good friends with some of the people that would have gladly taken that away from women. And I don't think that's a weakness of hers. I think that speaks to her ability to see the greater picture of what connects all of us together. And it's sad that she passed in a time where that has all but vanished from our interactions together. So I mean, I have an action figure of her.
I do too.
I think I sent it to you.
You did.
I have a book of her quotes, which I think Stacy gave to me. So it's, she's one of those kind of once in a lifetime people that you would be excited to tell your kids about what they stood for, what they accomplished, and that you can honest, there's very few people in the world that you can actually point to them and be like, you should aspire to be like that, man, woman, it doesn't matter, to have that kind of fortitude and that kind of dedication and that kind of adherence to your core principles and core values, and to never give in to selling out and to never give in to kind of the peer pressure. And she never even gave in to liberal pressure. She sometimes sided with the conservative sides of the court in legal matters because she stuck to her convictions, even though she was a liberal superhero. And to have the ability and fortitude to do stuff like that is, it's endlessly impressive. And she is going to be so missed, so missed. And it breaks my heart that her dying wish on her deathbed, of all the things she could have said and all the things that she's accomplished and all of the family that she had and all the people's lives that she changed, her dying wish was to not be replaced until there's a new president. And that is so unfortunate that that had to be what she left this world thinking about. And y'all better fucking vote like she's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And you better knock this shit off with, hey, I didn't like Biden, I'm going to vote for a third party. Fuck off. Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not hang on through pancreatic cancer, still writing dissent opinions, for you to throw your fucking vote away on someone. Erin?
So all of that was obviously very well said by both of you. You know, I'm ashamed to say that I didn't really become a huge politics person until probably the last 10 years of my life. I have always, I mean, like, known that I'm a lesbian and da-da-da, but, like, until I was out and proud and actually with someone that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, I didn't really understand why, you know, gay rights matter. I mean, I got it, but I didn't get it. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm making sense because I'm very emotional.
Yeah.
But I just, like, I feel like as I grew up, you don't have a lot of really amazing women to look up to that are older and wiser, and especially me, like, you know, my mom passed away, so I don't have her. And, like, unfortunately, Hillary Clinton is not my mom. And, like, it's just all these little things that have happened in my life have made me admire older women a lot. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it just was kind of like a shining light of someone that continued to fight for things and for people that she didn't know because she knew it was right. And I feel that it's really hard to find that in today's society. And to think that she fought her whole life for equality, and then to see that she had to, like, suffer through this fucking president that just wants to take so many rights away from people, and then she couldn't make it to the end, it's just really fucking sad. And I think what means the most to me with her is just that she is a fighter, and it's not easy to fight in today's day and age. And she continued even when she was at her sickest. So I think that's what I admire the most about her. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I don't have any Kleenex.
So here's some fun facts about RBG. She was one of only 9 women in a class of 500 at Harvard Law School, and she was also taking care of her 14-month-old baby at the same time. When she was asked by the men there why she was taking up a man's spot, and she felt she had to be flawless on behalf of all women. She'd go to school, come home, take care of her daughter and put her to sleep, and then go back to studying. She never has days where she dreads going to work, but she says she's not a morning person. Though Justice O'Connor tried to get her to work out with her at her aerobics class at 8 a.m., Ginsburg says, "I'm a night person. Getting to work by 9:30 every morning was enough." She also did 20 push-ups a day. She said, "I do 10 to breathe, and then I do 10 more, but that's not the hardest part. After that, I do a 30-second plank," which was the hardest. So, she still talked about this article was written in 2016. So she says she would still talk about missing, Scalia. And she said that he was a force of challenge and laughter for her. So I think he made her think about things. He challenged her, probably her gut instinct to inherently go left, which is, I think, one of the reasons they had a good friendship, because I think she probably challenged him in the other direction. Before RBG was added to the Supreme Court, there was only one bathroom on site, and that was for men. After she was appointed, however, she got a woman's bathroom. RBG said Justice O'Connor no longer had to go back to her chambers when the need arose. So when RBG was battling cancer, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor encouraged her to do chemo on Friday so she could go back to work on Monday to avoid looking weak in front of the other men, which is horrific. Her favorite amendment is the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified in 1868 and granted citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, including former slaves recently freed. It also forbids states from denying any person life, liberty, or property without due process of law, or to deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Who has a favorite amendment? She's known as the Thurgood Marshall of our time. This one was interesting to me because I didn't know this, but she does not support a constitutional amendment to reverse Citizens United. And the reason why is she thinks it was a huge mistake, but fears that other decisions politicians in the country might want to amend if we open those floodgates. And one among them would be Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
So she was
that
very
takes a lot of forethought to put that together, like, you know.
Yeah. Her mother died very early on. So Celia Bader Amster died the day before Ginsburg's high school graduation, but in their short time together, Celia managed to instill her daughter that an education was not something to be taken for granted. Celia herself, whom Ginsburg regularly, according to Iron Cameron, in the documentary Notorious RBG, called the most intelligent person she'd ever known. She went to work at the age of 15 in order to help put her brother through college. At the 1993 White House press conference announcing her nomination to the Supreme Court, Ginsburg wrapped up her remarks with an emotional tribute to the woman who was never allowed to reach her full potential. She said, "I have a last thank you. It's to my mother. My mother was the bravest, strongest person I've ever known, who was taken from me much too soon. I pray that maybe I will be all that she would have been had she lived in an age when women could aspire and achieve, and daughters are cherished as much as sons." I know. I'm trying not to cry. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg's marriage was one of equals. During a time when women were expected to put their husband's needs before their own, Ruth and Marty Ginsburg refused to let prescribed gender roles dictate how they ran their household. In the years when Marty, a successful tax lawyer in his own right, was busy trying to make partner, Ruth took on the brunt of the housework and child rearing. And as Ruth's career blossomed, Marty made sure there was dinner on the table for their two kids and would often drag his wife out of the office late at night to ensure she ate a proper meal and got some rest. Unlike his culinary challenged wife, Marty was a whiz in the kitchen and would famously bake cakes for her clerk's birthday celebrations. After he passed, the Supreme Court Historical Society published a book of his recipes titled Chief Supreme.
You should watch the, if you guys haven't seen the movie On the Basis of Sex, mm-hmm. you should watch that, because it's basically about her and her husband, like, in like the early cases that she tried and their relationship and stuff. It's really good.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg often chose to take cases that seemingly benefited men. For Ginsburg, the gender of her plaintiff didn't matter. What really mattered was whether or not each case could potentially overturn laws restricting women's and men's roles. In 1974's Kahn v. Fine, for example, she represented a widower who believed he should be entitled to a Florida tax exemption granted only to widows. And in 1975, Wittenberg v. Weissenfeld, she argued on behalf of a widower whose school teacher's wife had been the family's primary breadwinner. Once she passed away, leaving him with their infant son, he was unable to collect Social Security benefits, which, again, were only awarded to widows. The court ruled unanimously in favor of Weissenfeld, who only wanted to be able to stay home with his son until he was old enough to go to school full time. Ginsburg was also wary of any laws that that were used to shield women from the harsh world outside the home, such as rules barring women from jury service. As she wrote in her very first Supreme Court brief for 1971's Reed versus Reed, the pedestal upon which women have been placed has all too often, upon closer inspection, been revealed as a cage. Let's see. Some other ones we haven't talked about. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has cultivated a reputation as the court's greatest dissenter. Although her career as a litigator mirrored that of Thurgood Marshall, Hirschman believes Ginsburg's judicial legacy will place her among the court's so-called great dissenters. In disagreeing with their colleagues at the time they served among them, these legendary jurists anticipated every core development of 20th century judicial law, the dismantling of Jim Crow segregation, the protection of free speech, and the allowance of economic recognition. By speaking up when her conservative colleagues arrive at a decision she believes to be regressive, Ginsburg is planting seeds of social progress, lending her powerful words to the movements that will affect change from the ground up. She also picks her dissent collars. She has different dissent collars for different reasons. Her lace one is if they're in the majority, if her opinion's in the majority. And then she picks the mirrored bib necklace that was gifted from Glamour's 2012 Woman of the Year Awards when she says they come up short. She said it's a look that's fitting for dissent. Ruth Bader Ginsburg really, really loved the opera. She can probably do more push-ups than you. And then, of course, the final one was that she wasn't going anywhere, but we all know now that that's not true. She also launched the American Civil Liberties Union. She was their lead. She was their lawyer that actually started the ACLU. It was in conjunction with starting the ACLU. She served on the D.C. Federal Appeals Court. She was also named one of Forbes magazine's 100 most powerful women from 2004 through 2011. And her first encounter with cancer was in 1999 when she had her first surgery to remove colon cancer. So she's been doing this for a long time.
Well, even just during that time, like, she had pancreatic cancer, she had colon cancer, she fell in her office and broke 3 ribs. She then, you know, most recently had surgery to remove cancerous growths from her lungs. So, I mean, she, and that's all just in the last, you know, since the early 90s, like, that's a lot to go in and have that done and then be back in your office, like, in your late 80s.
Yeah. From 1959 to 1961, she was a law clerk to a judge in the U.S. District Court, Southern District Court of New York. In 61 to 63, she was a research associate for an associate director of Project of International Procedure at Columbia Law School. From 63 to 72, she was a professor at Rutgers University of Law. From 72 to 80, she was a professor at Columbia University School of Law. She was the first woman to be hired with tenure at Columbia University School of Law. From 77 to 78, she was the fellow at the Center for Advanced Study of Behavioral Sciences at Stanford. From 80 to 93, she was a judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District Court of Columbia Circuit. And then August 10th, 1993, she was sworn in as Supreme Court Justice, filling the seat held by Justice Byron White. Oh, and August 31st of 2013, she was the first Supreme Court Justice to officiate a same-sex marriage ceremony. She was also, she received the American Bar Association's highest honor, which is the ABA medal. And all of this is going on while she's still undergoing all kinds of different cancer treatments. So, she also won the Bergeron Prize for Philosophy and Culture for her contributions to social justice and general equality. The $1 million award for championing human rights will go to a nonprofit of her choosing, or it went to a nonprofit of her choosing. And then in just recently, August 26, 2020, she was selected as this year's recipient of the National Constitution Center's Liberty Medal for her efforts to advance liberty and equality for all.
She was also the first tenured female professor at Columbia.
I just said that.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
I was like waiting until you were done talking to say that, and I didn't even know that that's what you said.
I can see you're not listening to me.
Oh, I'm just so sad. I like can't even.
So let's talk about what happens now.
I don't know. Thank you. No, thank you.
So you object. All right. So the election is in what? 50 days.
Yeah.
50 days. The average, Aaron, what was that information you sent us? The average Supreme Court hearing takes 70 days.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, the average was 71 days or something.
Yeah, like 2.2 months from the, from the nomination to the vote.
Yeah.
Right.
So the average number of days from nomination to final Senate vote since 1975 is 67 days, 2.2 months, while the median is 71 days.
So what do we think is going to happen? Even though we all remember 2016 when Scalia died in February, and Mitch McConnell said that it's not fair to appoint a Supreme Court nomination in a lame duck presidency, even though there was 10 months left in the presidency.
I mean, to be fair, that actually, he was a lame duck president. And Trump isn't necessarily, but there's no guarantee he'll be reelected. So I think they should consider it a lame duck presidency. And yeah, 10 months left is not...
Right, because if you go by that time frame, then why even have like a fourth year? Because you're talking about several months. I could honestly see if Scalia had died in the summer, because you are building up to the election. But you had almost an entire year left of a presidency, so that to me is kind of ridiculous. I do think Mitch McConnell is going to do his little flippy floppy and try to elect someone. Sure. So,
yeah, because when it benefits them.
Right.
But the Senate's not in session again until after the election, because they're all out campaigning. So.
Oh, you don't think he'll call them back?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's an election happening, so I don't. I mean, he could. I just don't know how great that is for anyone's.
Well, let's play worst case scenario. Campaign. And he calls them back to do a Senate hearing for a Supreme Court judicial appointment. Okay. Because. They now only need, that used to be that you needed 60 votes to appoint a Supreme Court, or actually any judge for that matter, but now you only need 50. Republicans hold the majority in the Senate, so they need 51 votes to appoint a Supreme Court justice. So essentially you need four senators to stand up and say, no, we're not going to do this. And I'm talking about this not to disrespect RBG's legacy, but because I know the next question is going to be, how do we stop it?
Right.
So you need four senators. Lisa Murkowski, senator out of Alaska, has already said that she will not vote on an appointment for a Supreme Court pick. She said fair is fair. They didn't do it when they appointed, when Obama didn't have the chance to appoint a Supreme Court justice, and she doesn't think they should do it now. So we need three more. I'm thinking Romney, So if you're in Utah, call your senator. Okay. Mm-hmm. Call your senator in Utah. Collins, you useless motherfucker. I swear to God, you voted for Kavanaugh. You owe us one.
Right.
And if Trump wins again, you get to make the appointment. That's how it works. But it should be held off until after the election. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
So you got Collins in Maine. Who, Collins, hey, hon, you're already in a lot of fucking trouble up there. So do the right thing. And then who's left? Who is that useless asshole in Colorado? Gardner?
I think you're right. I think it is.
Is it Cory Gardner? Yeah, isn't he?
I just love that you call him a useless asshole.
He is a useless asshole, and he's in a deep purple state. So he's in a lot of, if he pushed this through, it's not like he's in fucking Mississippi where they're like, yeah, burn down everything to get another Supreme Court pick. Yeah. Like, so there's your other three.
Cory Gardner?
Yeah.
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 He is a useless motherfucker. Like, what? Who else, though? I do think you can get Romney to do it.
I think so, too.
And Collins normally goes with Murkowski, even though Murkowski voted against Kavanaugh.
Thank God.
This is when you need those assholes like Jeff Flake. Jeff, you took the easy way out, and you bounced instead of fighting. Yeah. Well, you know dumb Ted Cruz is going to be pushing for it because he's on the list. He's on the... Yep. Ted fucking Cruz is on the list to be a Supreme Court justice.
That just makes me want to vomit.
I know.
Who else we got? Who else is a senator in jeopardy? I'm trying to think of people so we can start calling these senators and tell them not to vote.
And Jeff Flake doesn't have any...
No, like, Jeff Flake retired.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, he would have been... I'm trying to think if he has any, like, contemporaries, you know? Like...
Justin Amash, but he's an independent now.
Right.
You know, who voted against, like, Republican-wise, like, for the impeachment? Like, who? I know Romney did.
That's it. You know what, actually?
Didn't Marco Rubio?
No.
Didn't Rubio?
It was only Romney.
Like he did.
Mm-mm. Only Romney. What Biden needs to come out and say right now, honestly, is if they push this Scottish seat through... And he wins, he's going to appoint two more justices to make it 11 because of the stolen seats. And he's going to switch the federal courts to 100. Like, that's what he needs to come out and say. Hardcore, you need to honor this.
Wait, explain that to me again.
So there's talk back and forth on whether or not if a Democrat gets into office, if they should expand the Supreme Court to 11 justices instead of 9. And if McConnell steals this seat again, because he stole the last one from Merrick Garland.
From Merrick Garland, yeah.
Yeah. If he steals this one also, then Biden should say, I'm going to appoint two more to take back the seats that you took. And that should be enough to stop McConnell. I don't actually believe in expanding the Supreme Court, but if McConnell goes this route, I think it's a valid kick to the teeth.
Oh my God, I'm so, I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue.
You sniff glue?
This not from article the airplane. Right
no. I was like, Aaron, you need help.
The article I'm reading right now only lists Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney. So, sick. We need another one. Like,
Cory Gardner.
Be someone who realizes that this isn't fair.
Cory Gardner.
Well, yeah.
He's the only senator I can think of that. Actually, Mitch McConnell, he's in jeopardy of losing his seat to Amy McGrath right now, too.
Yeah, but he's already said that they're going to move forward with.
He has?
Filling her replacement. Yeah.
I haven't been on Twitter. I've been talking.
He said that. Hold on. Let me go back to it.
For fuck's sake.
He already indicated that he's ready for another confirmation battle either before or immediately after the election.
So even
I don't know if they can do it in 8 weeks, but whatever. Like.
So even if Biden gets elected, he's going to try and push it through in the lame duck session when, wow.
Yeah.
He's just the worst, man.
God, right, because really it's such a double standard. You can't just say that's what you believe when it's convenient for you.
Yes, you can. Did you hear him give that speech where he laughed about it?
And I'm sorry, with Obama, that was 10 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot that can fucking happen in 10 months.
Do you remember 10 months ago?
No.
Because I do. It was December.
Oh, December. What a great month.
Oh. It was Christmas.
Oh, it was so nice.
That's how much time there was, though, is what I'm saying. Like, when McConnell said he was a lame duck and wouldn't let him nominate Merrick Garland, who, by the way, was not a liberal justice. He was a very moderate justice.
Super moderate.
He had a lot of support from both Republicans and Democrats. But it was that long ago that it was the same time frame of last Christmas. Look at all of that has happened. That is not a lame duck. Lame duck is technically after the election into the new year. Because you're not supposed to conduct business while the transition's happening.
Right.
So I'm stupid when it comes to government sometimes. So, okay. Biden gets elected, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say this.
He's not sworn until January, though.
Right. But so, like, Biden gets elected. Can Trump still put a Supreme Court justice in?
He's still president.
Yeah.
God fucking damn it.
But right. I'm saying the norms dictate that is truly the lame duck period because Biden's installing the transition team. They're doing the turnover. New senators are getting ready to move in. Senators are getting ready to move out. Everyone's readjusting their staff. Like, that is the 2-month period where all of that transition is supposed to happen. That's why they call it a lame duck.
If there's no business that's supposed to be conducted, isn't that fucking business?
It's just a norm, though. There's no laws.
That's where we need to have laws.
Like, well, I guarantee you there'll be laws that come out of it after this.
Yeah.
Because they've assumed that people are going to adhere to common decency and normal practices.
And that's not going to fucking happen with Trump because he has clearly no not. Idea what that fucking Merrick
Garland rule isn't going to stand very strong, I don't think.
Well, that's why you need four senators.
I know.
Fuck.
It's just not okay. Like the country should get to decide who replaces her. Supreme Court justice is a lifetime appointment. That's a big fucking deal. And you already screwed the pooch with Kavanaugh. So,
like, this would tip the scale. We'd have a conservative Supreme Court until Lincoln was 40.
Yeah.
Fuck. That seriously makes me have bile in my mouth. Like, it makes me want to vomit. Like, I'm not being dramatic. I'm not trying to, like, get the laugh.
And
like,
then Justice Roberts isn't the swing vote anymore.
Such a huge protector of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and then Justice Roberts, who's been a pretty consistent swing vote for the Supreme Court since it has been split with four essentially liberal judges and four conservative judges, Roberts has actually stepped up to his role as Chief Justice and done the right thing several times, or the fair thing. I don't always know if it's right, but the fair thing. So if RBG's spot goes to a conservative, that's it.
Fuck.
Although Clarence Thomas is getting old.
That's the balance. Like,
Clarence Thomas is getting old, though.
That's true.
So you may be able to get it back to balanced.
But still, what a slap in the face to her legacy if that's the case. And I know Chuck Schumer is not about it, and they're going to be doing as much as they can to make sure that it doesn't happen.
There's only so much they can do, though. Even if not a single Democrat showed up to vote, they could still vote them in.
Not enough. Yeah.
Oh, God, that makes me
Well, here's the thing, too, that's super frustrating. We shouldn't even be having a discussion about Supreme Court justices' like political affiliation. Like, they're not supposed to be liberal or conservative.
They're supposed to be
apolitical. Yeah, right, they're supposed to be apolitical figures.
But they're clearly not.
Yeah.
Like, even if you just look at, like, I don't know. The whole
thing. It's hard to think right now. Like, my brain is not functioning on all cylinders. Like, I just feel like my legs have been taken out from under me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was just walking along through the kitchen, and then my phone lit up, and I was like, oh, who's that? And it was Stacy. News alert. Fucking RBG is gone, and I was just like, I almost dropped my phone, and now I can't breathe, and now I had to take a shower, and now I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this has been the worst fucking week. Fuck this week.
And you know what would just piss me off, like, even more? In two terms, Obama only got to like he only got two justices. This would be Trump's third in one term. And that's not like, if anybody shouldn't be making that decision, it's him. Like, who'd we get from him? Fucking Neil Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Like,
or at the very least, it would be an act of good faith if they went back to norms and said, to appoint someone, you'll need 60 votes. At least then you get a moderate justice. I would be fine if they re-elected Merrick Garland. I would be okay with that. I'm not even saying we necessarily need a liberal. I just want to see a fair justice. Like, I want to see a fair one.
Trump pick another one, especially this close to the election. Like, if
they're all in his pocket now.
Well, but that's the thing. If he loses, he's not the person that the people want to lead the country. So he shouldn't get to make that decision. If you're that confident that you get to make that decision, well, we'll see after the election.
Right.
And if you win, like, fair enough, then I guess you get to pick the next Supreme Court.
Well, we're all fucked anyway, right? Nothing matters then.
Yeah, at that point, like, I'm going to be searching for a way out of this country.
God, we all are. I guess Canada's nice. I don't know. It's just frustrating. Like, I don't know. Just the difference. Like, when you look at the times, like, Obama nominated two female Supreme Court justices.
Of color.
Like, of color, yeah. And who do we get stuck with? Fucking two white guys. Broy McBroson and, like,
Chad.
Neil Gorsuch, I have to be honest, he hasn't been nearly as bad as I thought he was going to be. He, for a conservative justice, he's a lot more like Antonin Scalia than...
Right, I agree. But, like, Kavanaugh has...
Oh, Kavanaugh's the worst.
Kavanaugh didn't even know anything about being a lawyer.
Right.
There are aspects of being an actual lawyer.
Just having beers with my bros.
Right. They asked him questions about trial law and different stuff, and he's just like, I don't remember. I've never done that. Like,
Squiggly and me were having beers that day, bro. Like, right. I don't even know what to tell you, man.
Like, you don't get to be like, I just cannot.
At least Gorsuch had the qualifications.
True. Kavanaugh lacked that entirely.
And Gorsuch was a little bit easier to swallow.
Qualification.
Well, Gorsuch was easier to swallow, too, because he was replacing Scalia. Like,
right. So it made more sense, yeah.
Right. He was replacing Kennedy? Like, oof.
Yeah.
Kennedy was always the swing vote.
Freaking Chad.
Yeah.
Dude.
We were just doing the devil's triangle, man. No, it's a drinking game. That's not like me putting it up some chick's ass without her letting me or even kind of showing any interest in me. She was totally passed out. It's fine.
Fine. You don't even remember.
Yeah.
She doesn't say no. It's fine, guys.
We're not laughing at sexual assault. Like, that's not.
No, we're laughing at the fact that a fucking idiot got appointed to the Supreme Court. He has, like, as much lawyer knowledge as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think you actually have more, to be honest.
I've seen enough Law and Order to be able to run circles around Kavanaugh, is all I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying.
No.
Not that I'm saying that between all the shows I've watched, I'm an official lawyer and doctor, but I mean.
Kind of. Also, kind of.
Also, the deputy chief of staff, come on.
Thank you. Also could work in the West Wing. Mm-hmm. I'd be a good press secretary, I think.
I think you would, too.
I mean, I feel like, one, yes, but I also feel like the bar's so low now. Like, low.
Yeah.
Like, my basset hounds who have legs that are, like, this big could hop over it.
Right.
And they barely get over the door jam.
Personal, like, press secretary standard of CJ Craig, not the real, like, oh, my God. I can't, how many press secretaries have we been through with?
48. I don't know.
A lot.
Like, if you went up there and didn't, like, pass out, you would already be doing better. Like, even if you didn't say anything.
My favorite press secretary has
been... Scaramucci?
No, what was the big fat white guy? Was that... Who was that? I remember Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, Sean Spicer.
Sean Spicer. Spicy Spicer.
That was my favorite. Bushes. Anytime Saturday Night Live can come in and pick someone to be the person to play that, I'm like, all right, that's my favorite.
I forgot about Scaramucci. That was like...
You forgot about the Mooch?
Almost
10 days, 10 solid days of the mooch.
How many days?
10.
Oh my God.
What about, what's her name?
Shorter than Kim Kardashian's marriage. Huckabee?
Sarah Sanders.
Sarah Sanders.
Oh, Jesus.
Don't forget about her. She looked like she'd
been ridden hard, put away wet numerous times.
She's still out there defending Trump.
Yeah, she was on The View not that long ago doing it, like a week or two ago. God. Disgusting.
Ugh. Christ. I don't even know. Like, I just, it's just, this is, I,
There's going to be a lot of RBGs for Halloween this year, I think.
There
I want to get a dissent collar and wear it when I go vote.
I don't even, is there going to be a fucking Halloween, Stacey? Come on.
If you guys like the Home Tea and you order t-shirts from there frequently like I do, I just saw on Facebook, although, whatever. I'm in a special group of Home Tea people where the owner gets in there and there's like design, whatever. But people were already asking, like, where's the RBG shirts, whatever. And he said they're going to be posted tonight or tomorrow morning. So
didn't I give you an RBG shirt?
Yeah, but I'm going to need more than one.
One for every day of the week. Hello.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to wear from now on.
So. What are you guys obsessed with this week? Okay, I'll go first.
All right.
Two, I watched The Social Dilemma, which, what the fuck? That's actually what I was going to talk about today, because we got some listener questions. Sorry, we'll get to you guys next week about The Social Dilemma. I mean, so everything, the reason I felt it was like an important documentary, I have read enough about the impact of social media on our brains and like political affiliations and social dissent to have already known the vast majority of what they were saying in there.
Right.
One of the reasons I'm trying to push it so hard is because I actively seek that information out and I don't believe other people do. And I thought they put it together in a way that was easily digestible and easy to understand. And you could truly see the implications because some people were hating on like the dramatization of it and stuff. But I actually thought it was important because it showed it in like real life, how it actually looks. It's not anything abrupt or apparent or that you see. It's that feeling of, oh, I left my phone and like at home and you feeling kind of anxious and like, what does that actually signal to you that you're addicted to it? You know, it shows kind of the tear that it creates within families. I also liked how it showed kind of the generational differences of like, yeah, the oldest daughter was like, I don't need that because she grew up without one. And then you have kind of the middle kid who was more like, yeah, I kind of scan it from time to time, you know, whatever. And then the youngest one who was just obsessed with it. And it kind of shows how easily, especially if you don't think young white men are being targeted by some of these extremist groups, you're not paying attention. Right. Even young white men who are growing up in very liberal households are being, they can have an entirely different life on social media and on the internet that you know nothing about. And they are being preyed upon by some of these extremist groups that are telling them to be a man and like all of these different things that are forcing them into cult-like scenarios where they're going to end up getting hurt. Like that 17-year-old boy in Wisconsin, that didn't happen by accident. That was targeted yeah. specifically to his age group to suck him into this kind of thinking that yes, are we all impulsive at 17? Our frontal cortex aren't fully developed. We make poor decisions, especially young men. They don't have good reasoning until they're about the age of 27 is when men's minds are fully developed. I'm sorry. It's true for like the two guys who listen to us. So they're actually most at risk at that age group when they're really trying to find themselves and find their place in society. And especially with this huge movement of this conflicting narrative of it's okay for boys to be sensitive and it's okay for boys to cry and it's okay for boys to have these feelings. And then the conflicting narrative of no, suck it up, be a man, don't show your feelings, protect the women in your life. Like you have these conflicting stories going on and depending on how a certain person is wired or how they perceive masculinity or how they perceive femininity or how they perceive the world around them, they're going to fall into one of these two categories. And if we aren't having active conversations with the young men in our lives, talking about how they are actually feeling and what they're looking at and what they're seeing, they are easily preyed upon. And it's not because they're stupid or weak or any of those things. It's because it's designed to capture their attention. Like, it's built to reel them in. So I thought it did a really good job of showing that and explaining that. And I enjoy thought experiments and of like, how do we solve this problem of, cause it's not going to go away. Cause even if tomorrow they banned Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, which I know they're already doing, Instagram, even if you did all of that, other things are going to pop up in its place. So the answer isn't to get rid of it, but I also didn't necessarily like their answer of regulation. I think we need to have more conversations about personal responsibility around social media and the impact it's having on you. Like, we need to, how many of us have loving, caring people in our lives that we thought the world of that are now radicalized? Like, absolutely radicalized. So I think those are the kinds of things. I heard this really, I was listening to this podcast today, and one of the women on it, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, said, instead of getting mad at these sources, we need to look under the hood and see why these sources appeal to these people in our lives. What are they actually missing from their lives or feel that they're lacking that these sentiments and these thoughts are sucking them in? Those are the conversations we need to have. We're not going to win the fake news argument because they don't believe it. So we need to kind of identify what's bringing them there and focus on that. Because if you can pull out the root, then you can get rid of it. And I thought that was a really good way to think about it. The other thing
I was just going to say, I really thought it was interesting how much they showed that it really is an addiction. Mm-hmm. Like when he wasn't on his phone for like, what was it? A week, mm-hmm. 5 days or something. And then he finally broke down. And then it was like, he literally went into a downward spiral where he was not off of his phone at all ever, like until he fell asleep at night. And like, I thought that was really interesting because like, there is so much to be said about the fact that some people just literally cannot put their phones down. And it's like that whole, like, they're lonely, they're bored, and then they start surfing, and then they go into deep, dark holes. Not that we are not, like, guilty of that. We've all been down
the Taylor Swift.
I mean, we've all been there. I mean, but it's lovely down there. There's no hate.
It's a wonderland, but don't...
But beautiful. It is literally like a nice, beautiful, woodsy, folklore-y, wonderful place. But there's also other rabbit holes that exist that like these people go down and you're just like, where are you going? And then it's so hard to get them out of. And that's where it was so interesting, like the addiction aspect. Like, yeah, we all like pick our phones up and check it. And like, yes, it's probably you probably are a little addicted to it. But that kid, when he would not stop and it was just constant, and then it did make me wish that I could get rid of all of my social media, and I was so just kind of like floored by it all and the idea that it's so difficult for people to just kind of disconnect. It's just crazy.
The fact that it was like targeted too, like the stuff that was sent when he wasn't on there, like that thing about like your girlfriend is in a new relationship or whatever. Like, I feel like that's totally stuff that happens. I get notifications when it's like, hey, you haven't been on the app in a while. Mm-hmm. Like, hear what your friends are saying, or you left something in your shopping cart. Here's 10% off. Like they send things specifically to reel you back in based on the amount of time you're spending or not spending.
Well, I actually think there could be an argument made for target marketing, because I actually appreciate seeing things that I actually am interested in and want to see.
For products.
Yes. I know I'm actually picking products, not just picking.
Not like, oh, you believe crazy fucking conspiracy theories. Here's all these conspiracy theories you should group. Like, join the Pizzagate group.
Right, which was what I was saying. I think it's important, getting rid of social media isn't the answer because it's not going to happen. And like you were saying, my first impulse was I'm deleting all my fucking social media. I'm not doing this anymore. But then I'm like they said in the movie or the documentary, it still affects you whether you're on it or not because it's affecting the world around you. It's people are forming political opinions and friendships and affiliations based on what they're seeing in social media. So even if you cut it out, you're not going to escape it. So the most important lesson to learn from it is good digital hygiene, which is why I want people to watch this, because I feel like if you're making informed decisions then, or at least have a moment pause while you're looking at something to be like, maybe I should fact check this against something else. At least it should give people pause, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know I've gotten better. If I'm not getting my source or story directly from like the New York Times or the Washington Post or something, I always try to Google it and see if I can find it somewhere else too. Yeah. Because if I can't find it somewhere else, I'm not going to believe it until I see one of the major outlets pick it up. And some people will say that's brainwashing because it's, you know, liberal media or whatever. And it's like, no, I don't believe some dude on YouTube that just has one light behind him. Like, I want to see this. I'd like to hear from an expert or two.
Oh, you don't want to get your facts from memes?
Well, I mean, sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
You know.
Sometimes I do. Yeah. The other thing.
I was just going to say the other thing, too, that I thought was interesting was when he said that fake news spreads 6 times faster than like a normal news article. I was like, holy motherfucker. I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
Like, because of everything that happened in the last election. Like, you know it.
Right. But so fake news makes money.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just like, okay, I get it. But then when you hear the numbers, you're like, fuck me, man. Like, that's so crazy. Sorry, well, Jackie.
The other crazy part, and the one part I do want to push back on about the documentary was the one guy, and I can't remember his name right now, but he was saying, like, people didn't have this response when, you know, bicycles were created. Yes, they did. And they were especially thrown by women riding them. Because it freed them from the house and allowed them to go places. People had this reaction when paper was created and used in classrooms because the older generation thought, well, now they'll never know how to write on a chalkboard. You see people losing their minds over cursive going on. Who the fuck needs cursive anymore? Like, those aren't hills I'm going to die on. Like, cursive was made, assholes, as a shorthand way to continue writing because that's the only way you really had to write. That's not necessary anymore because our technology is advanced beyond that. We're not
using quills.
Right. But so every time there's an advancement in technology, this happens. So we are wired to manage it and deal with it. So I don't think we have to be alarmed as much as we need to be prepared and mindful and thoughtful about our consumption and how we have these conversations based around it, and to remind people to be thoughtful and mindful of how they're consuming media also.
Sure.
So that's but I'm trying to get everyone to fucking watch it. So
it was, I learned a lot. It was very good.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm obsessed with this week, I have been reading Michael Cohen's book, Disloyal.
Ooh.
I have some thoughts. I'm almost done. I'm like 5 chapters away from being done. Few things. I'm impressed by his level of honesty about what a piece of shit he is. Okay.
What a piece of shit he is?
Yes.
Like himself.
Yes. Okay. And not so much piece of shit as much as taking responsibility for the role that he has played in what has transpired. I know some people have already written him off. I think when someone is truly sorry for what they did and is asking for forgiveness, you should consider it. I'm not saying everyone has to, but you should consider it because he's owning up to a lot of stuff in this book. I think it's a fascinating portrayal of Donald Trump and exactly who he is as a person and all of the really shady, shady shit that goes on at the Trump Corporation and how it kind of bled over into the presidency. And how he has pretty much confirmed this was always just to make more money. He never planned on actually winning anything. The other thing that I appreciated in it, although it's hard for me to find any amount of grace or love for these individuals, is him portraying the Trump children as children and kind of products of their environment. And they got kind of sucked into this. And although they are complicit now, that was probably never their intention. They're just individuals who have been so starved of like their father's attention and love that they have kind of fallen into this pattern of doing everything he wants. It's still, they're grown-ups though. And as grown-ups, you make decisions that impact your life. But I appreciated seeing them in a different light because I think it's very easy to write all of the Trump kids off as being kind of evil also. And I'm not convinced that they are so much as that they are stuck in this cult also. I could be wrong. That they he gave a humanized version of them that I wasn't fully expecting, which made me at least pause on my interpretations of them. And then the other thing that we all kind of said when it was going down, he talks a lot about what went down in Russia and how, yes, there was interference from the Russians, but it was not intentional because Trump is too dumb to actually do it intentionally. Like, yes, it happened, but it was never really instigated by Trump because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Which, again, stupidity doesn't absolve you from crimes. You're still committing crimes. But he was saying everyone thinks he's like some like mastermind behind this shit, and that's not what happened. He was trying to leverage his political popularity with Russia to make money, and it ended up being collusion. So there's kind of these different, because again, we immediately kind of go to, well, he's evil, he did this to win the election, and really he was doing it to profit the Trump industry, and he ended up winning the election. Like, it wasn't
trying to win.
Right. It's non-secular. I feel
like that night he was probably like, oh, fuck.
Right. Which even Michael Cohen says, I'm not absolving him of what he did wrong. I'm just telling you, he's not the mastermind you all think he is. Like, this was an accident based on trying to make shady business deals.
But that's basically, remember when his, the one chick did the op-ed and she was his former campaign manager, like in the beginning. And she said the exact same thing. Like, he was not in this to win. He didn't know he was going to win. And then when he did, and it looked like he was going to, he was too full of ego to not just go with it.
Right. And that's kind of almost the exact same thing Michael Cohen is saying through this is, he's such a narcissist and such, he is a racist and he is a bigot and he is sexist and he is a sexual predator. And he talks about Trump hitting on his 15-year-old daughter and he talks about all of that. And
that's so gross.
He talks about the years his wife and kids spent begging him to stop working for Trump and how he wishes now he would have listened to them because it is his eternal shame that he played any part of this. So it's a very interesting read. He's actually a very good writer and he's actually pretty funny. Like there are parts of it that I'm just like, it's like that New York kind of bad guy humor where, cause he'll put in stuff like, can you fucking believe it? Like in little, like, yeah, it's,
is it written like how he talks?
Yes, it is written how he talks. And he's actually, for all of his faults, and I'm not trying to absolve Michael Cohen of anything here, it's an interesting read from behind the enemy lines of what takes place. And it's a lot of their history. The half of the book is their history together. And I think he's trying to show that this is just who Trump is. Like, whatever you think of him, he has a long history of being shady as fuck, screwing people over. And like, so if you expect anything different than him, you are deluding yourself because this is how he's conducted business always. He talks about all the vendors that he screwed over and all of the people that he had to screw over on Trump's behalf. And like, it's interesting.
That is interesting. All right. I'll put it on my list. I mean, it's been on my list. I just haven't gotten around to it.
What are you guys obsessed with?
You want me to go?
Whoever.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is like so fucking... Okay, guys, like, time to talk about me. But I started a new diet because I've just been very upset with, like, my body and just kind of, like, letting it weigh on me. I've been very depressed.
Ba-dum-psh.
I'm sure a lot of it has to do with COVID. A lot of it has to do with just, like, outside shit just weighing on me. But I looked into like what different things, and I know we talked last week about, I think Stacey, you said you're doing Weight Watchers and Gail's doing Weight Watchers.
Yeah. So, cause TikTok Weight Watchers is very popular. So thanks TikTok.
So I started Noom, and I don't know if you guys have heard of Noom. I actually really like it so far. It has been very helpful.
We're women. We're in their target marketing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said Noom to Gail, and she's like, I never heard of it before. So, I mean, maybe she's just because she's already doing Weight Watchers. I don't know. I really don't know. She's too old. I'm just kidding.
I think she doesn't listen.
No. But what I really like about it is this is going to sound so like it breaks it down by like, what is your ultimate goal? And why do you want that goal? So like, and it's not like, we don't want you to tell us how much weight you want to lose. Yes, they want to know, but like, that should not be your ultimate goal. Why do you want to lose this weight? And like, my whole thing is like, I don't necessarily want to lose like a shit ton of weight. Like, I don't think that I'm quote unquote fat. Like, you know, I don't think I'm obese. I don't, I just feel very uncomfortable in my body right now. And
yeah,
I get that. And it's like, it's so frustrating because, you know, like there are certain things that hurt now that didn't when I was 20 pounds lighter, you know, like my knees are hurting more. And I've already had knee surgery on one of my knees. Like I need to be careful. Like I'm 40, like I'm not getting any younger. So, one of the things that it's, you know, was like, okay, so why would you like to lose weight? And I just said, I was like, I would really like to stop caring what people think about me by my body type. Like, I don't want to walk into a room and have everybody look at me and me go, everybody thinks I'm fat. Like, I'm so sick of feeling like that. So yeah. That's one of the things that like breaks down for you. Like, why you feel these certain ways? What are your triggers? Why do you eat? And that's one thing that's so hard for me. Like, I'm by myself a lot in the evenings. So what's your number one trigger? Being lonely. Why are you?
There's like a weird glare on my thing. Anyway.
Oh. Like, are you trying to pet me?
Pinching the camera.
It's okay, Erin. You're fine. But it's just been really fun to like read some of the articles, and they try to like mix in humor, which is cool. But I just like to, I like knowing that it's trying to like change my habits, not just make me lose weight. Like, I don't know. Cause I do have a lot of bad habits, and I did low carb for years. Like for the last probably 3 years I was doing keto. So like it clearly stopped working. Like I just, and now I'm like, I'm able to eat bread again, and I'm like eating it going, I shouldn't be eating this. And then, and that's like another habit that I have to like break is like food is okay. And I'm allowed to eat food. So it's just been really weird. Like the other day, I said to Gail, I was just like, I said something to her about like, I'm just going to have a sandwich. And she's like, you're not allowed to eat bread. And I'm like, yes, I am. I can eat bread now. And she's like, oh my God, you're like a different person. And I had a banana the other morning. You're not allowed to have bananas on keto.
Not keto.
So I'm like, I had a banana and it tasted amazing. And I'm like, oh my God, a banana. Like, it's just so weird. Like all these little things. And I am actually like feeling good. Like I slept throughout the night for the last like 3 nights. I didn't wake up. I didn't have to go to the bathroom. Like I normally wake up like 6 or 7 times. I don't sleep. Like that is so me. Like I never sleep, and I've been sleeping. So I'm feeling really good about like just this overall health journey that I'm on. And it is literally not about losing weight for me. It's about finally figuring out like I'm okay as who I am. And that's
awesome. Fun.
Thanks, Noom.
Aw.
Maybe we'll get a sponsor. Hey!
That'd be great. I'll just talk about mine, too. Like, yeah, I decided to do Weight Watchers because, I mean, that's not something I would have ever decided in a million years. But somehow I wound up on the TikTok algorithm because anytime I see a weight loss video, I like it. Cause I'm like, good for that person. Like whatever. But I mean, so far it's working for me. Like, I think it's just made me look more at like
portions like, and stuff.
Yeah. Like portions. And also like, I think having to track like what I'm eating, like it's super convenient cause I just scan barcodes and like, that's whatever. That's all I do. But not just portion control, but also like moderating the things that like oh, I had like frozen Trader Joe's macaroni and cheese for dinner tonight because I could, you know what I mean? Because I had eaten enough stuff
good
earlier
stuff, yeah.
in the day. Yeah. That was good. It was 0 points or whatever.
It teaches you good habits.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think so. And I think of the like diets, it's probably the most sustainable.
Right.
Because I haven't had to make a lot of like huge changes. Like I don't eat a lot of pasta. Like as far as like real noodles go, those were the first real noodles I've had in 5 weeks. Any bread I eat is usually for breakfast and it's like thin, like a bagel thin or like the Dave's Killer Bread thin slices. Like, and I only have it once a day as opposed to like, oh, I'm having bread for every meal and then a bowl of, I haven't had cereal in 5 weeks. Like, so that I know, and I love cereal so much.
Get Magic Spoon. It has like 2 grams of sugar in it and like no carbs.
Okay.
And it's super good.
Okay.
Super
and that's what
good.
I noticed, like the things that are lower in points, like there's a ton of stuff that's 0 points, which is like vegetables, fruits, lean protein, chicken, that kind of stuff. But then things that are lower carb and lower sugar, things that are like sugar-free, are lower points. And what I was surprised by was I thought the like sugar-free stuff would mess up my stomach because of the million diets I had to be on, like after my stomach got messed up. But it didn't, because that's one of the things you're not supposed to have is like artificial sweeteners. But I mean, so far so good. I feel a lot better. But the one part I was going to say that I am obsessed with is like, my brother is trying to lose weight. My other brother is keto. And so my other brother is trying to do like modified keto. Like he's got some health issues, so he can't necessarily do like full keto because it's so high fat. And he has some like gallbladder issues and stuff. So anyways, like we're all doing different things, but we have a, like, we were just having a group text and then, it's on my dad's side of the family. We have like a family group chat. We have a couple actually, and they all have very funny names. We have one with just my cousins that's called the kids table.
I love that.
Yeah. It's super funny. But he like sent a message and was like, hey, this is what we're doing. Like if anybody wants to like join in and just have support with like trying to make healthy lifestyle changes, like if you want to be in our group. So we have a group called the Accountability Buddies. And then we just like send pictures of what we're eating or like, hey, I did this thing or hey, this was difficult. So I think having that like group, like that kind of support helps, because I say I'm doing Weight Watchers, but really like I'm using the Weight Watchers app. Like I'm not doing any other part.
You're
of
not going to weigh-ins and sitting through the meetings and
no. Yeah. But the one thing I did do is obviously like I see a therapist and she referred me to a, oh my gosh, what's it called? Like a wellness. I don't know what the name of it is. Like a wellness coordinator or something, but like through my insurance, I don't know. I get like, every time you get referred, you get like 6 sessions. And then with her, we just talk more about like general health and well-being and diet and sleep and stress and all kinds of stuff. So I feel like that's been helpful too. And I'm glad my insurance covers that kind of stuff that like, oh, like not only just like a therapist, but also like, oh, we're more worried about like your wellness, like seeing the benefit of that as being preventative, I think is huge. So,
well, it's nice to see the switch like from overall wellness than just like weight.
Right. Because she was like, well, we kind of have to focus on one goal. So here's like of the things that we typically look at, like diet, exercise, sleep, stress, whatever. And she anxiety, whatever. And she's like, honestly, stress and anxiety are the biggest ones, right? Because those can affect and are affected by your sleep, your diet, your exercise, whatever. So it's a little bit more of a like holistic approach to everything. But in that, what I've tried to do, and I'm really bad at remembering to do it every morning. So sometimes I do it at night and sometimes I forget, but I got like a gratitude journal app. I have a regular gratitude journal, but it's 2020 and I only use Apple pencils. So I had to get one for my iPad.
bougie.
The thing she said to me in my first appointment was like, look, there's 2 ways you can start the day, right? You can start the day by like having a positive mindset and thinking about like, and the one I got you do at night and in the morning. So it's like, here's the things that I'm grateful for today. Here's some positive things about myself. Here's some things that are going to make today great. And then at the end of the day, you can write down like successes or whatever. So like you can do that and kind of shift your mind frame and have like a more positive outlook, or you can jump right on Facebook and go read a bunch of stuff that's going to make you mad and put you in a bad mood. And it's like, right, no wonder I'm in such a bad mood all the time, because that's what I'm doing first thing in the morning.
I like that. What is that called? The gratitude app?
Hold on. I have it right here. I don't remember what it's called exactly. It is called, sorry, I updated all my stuff. The new iOS is great, by the way. It's called 5-Minute Gratitude. So like at the top, it'll say something like smile more. And then it'll list like three things you're grateful for.
You can fuck like, all the way off if you tell me to smile more.
Better not be a man.
There better be a girl picture under there, a female picture.
Smile more, sweetheart. Today will be great because today I intend to, which I thought was like a good one. Affirmation, so you can just write I am whatever, and then you can write like wonderful things that happened today, and then how could today have been even better. And I like that it doesn't just say better, like how could today have been better, like how could today have been even better. I just like that like positive kind of spin on it.
Yeah. So okay, my little gratitude that I try to do in the morning, So for those that don't know, I spend an hour and 20 minutes driving to work every day. So I listen to an unhealthy amount of political news on the way to work. So one of the things that I have started doing is at the hour mark when I have my last 20 minutes left, I listen to music or I call one of my friends to chit chat with them, because if I realize I start my day worse at work if I go in having the last thing I heard in my car be political. And I also do it on my way home, because if I walk in the door to my wife and son having just listened to political stuff, I'm in a much worse mood than if I have listened to music and just like chilled out. And yeah, it's 99% of the time Taylor Swift. I don't care. That's no, how it goes down. That's how it happens for me, because she makes me feel better. Can we talk about Betty Live for a second?
Oh my God.
With just the acoustic guitar, just for a minute.
Oh my God.
So I am so, oh God. Taylor Swift is one of the few artists that has just gotten better as she's gotten older. Like,
that makes me want to cry too. My period is out of control, guys.
So to watch her on stage with just like a guitar and microphone and the harmonica backup. You guys, if you haven't watched Taylor Swift's AMA performance of Betty, it's I love that song beforehand, and now that's the only version I want to listen to ever again of Betty. Like, don't ever come at me with a different version of Betty, because that is the best one. And she's redoing her masters right now. Like, she's re-recording all of her music from Taylor Swift to Fearless to Red to Speak Now to all of them. And what are you laughing at? You came late to the game. You don't get to laugh.
You're laughing at me crying.
I'm like laugh crying. I'm like, don't you fucking tease me, Jake.
If she could re-record them all acoustically with just like her on a microphone and an acoustic guitar, I think it would be.
Take all my money.
Take all of my money. Like, yes. Yes, please, Taylor. Yes. Mm-hmm. Please do your master albums. Like that. I think that would be phenomenal. And I would really like to see her do some duets with people on all of them. Like, hey, I'm even here for fucking Katy Perry. Like, let's bring some people in. Let's do some collabs. Like, but Taylor Swift on the AMAs singing Betty was...
It was great.
You guys, she gets better as she gets older. It's crazy. It's crazy how much better she's gotten.
It was better, but it was.
Yeah.
It was so much better. It was like,
it's her facial things when she's like, you know, I hate the crowd. Like, come on, asshole. You know, I don't want to be here. Like, it's those little, it's the link that you see when a musician writes their own music, I think, is the connection, because she wrote those words for a reason. And you can see kind of through her facial expressions, what she was thinking when she wrote them. And I don't know how much more we can promote Taylor Swift on this podcast, but if Taylor, you haven't watched it yet, do it.
She should just come on the podcast. Sure.
Yeah,
we'd also hear like this.
What is she waiting for?
Maybe she will.
We would just be like this for an hour.
T. Taylor, if you are listening, which I'm sure you are, the three of us are very sad about RBG.
Which we know you are, too.
We're all really emotional because of quarantine and our periods. So if you could just come on, that'd be super duper.
So go listen to Betty AMA.
Then tag Taylor Swift on her Facebook page.
It's so good, guys. All right. I didn't know how we were going to make this go an hour and 20 minutes, just the three of us, but here we are. So
no, I hadn't. I had all the faith in the world.
I was just going to say, are you really like worried about us?
Remember, we got to vote like RBG is watching, because she is. She dedicated her entire life to pushing feminists forward and women forward. RBG fought for you, even if you were against her. Just remember that. Yeah. Like, even if you saw no validity in what she did, the things that she did do pushed your life. They made your life better. So if I hear one, I'm going to be real mad when I see those third party voters come through this time, guys. And I am here for it. I'm all about a third party, actually. Not in 2020. We can't do it.
No, we don't have time for that bullshit this year.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
If you don't want to vote for Biden, vote for Harris.
Right.
Because have you seen her in her Timberlands?
She wears God, the coolest damn, shoes.
She does. She exits planes. Like,
guys, she's so fucking smart. She's so smart. Besides her shoes, Aaron, she's very smart.
She is smart. I'm not saying she's not smart. She's also just fucking hot.
She is very hot. But more importantly, she's smart.
Yes. Also, she's very capable, smart,
funny, energetic. She's a perfect balance to Biden.
She really is.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Okay.
Try to have a great weekend, everyone.
Yeah, good luck.
I'm opening another White Claw.
Bye. All right, you guys are going to say bye this time? All right, fuck you guys.
Oh, bye.
No, it's too late. Bye. I already cut it off.